Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. This morning we're visiting with Derek Orwig, and he is from Wisconsin, and he's going to be talking a bit about World War One. Good morning to you, Derek.
Hey, good morning, Alvon.
Well, when we were looking for somebody who knows about what happened in World War One, how people lived during World War One, I was told, well, Derek is the person to talk with. So, Derek, how did you get so interested? I mean, that's been over 100 years ago when the U.S. entered World War One. How did you get so interested in this topic?
Well, yeah, in my youth, I was first introduced to World War One, and it was through various history books and publications. I remember being in elementary school and just being really fascinated with the Christmas truce that took place in 1914. And then as I got older, I was, playing army with my friends and wearing an old doughboy helmet, and we dug some replicated trenches. We might have gotten a little bit of trouble for that.
You might have, yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we dug some trenches, and they were pretty shallow. They seemed really deep to us at the time. As I got older, I kept researching the war, and as a kid, the veterans of the First World War, they seemed so ancient to me, and I wasn't quite equipped to really ask some questions, about their service. And so the older I've gotten, the more I feel that, it's such a forgotten war that it's important to share their stories and their written content and artwork and some of these resources that are out there.
Yes. Even though it was called the Great War and the war to end all wars, it at the time was the most unusual kind of thing. So we should tell people, Derek, that in addition to listening to you and hearing you this morning, they can come and hear more on Sunday, this Sunday, April 2nd, at the American Legion Memorial Building, that's also the Armory, at 201 Poplar Street in Atlantic. That all starts at 2 o'clock, and there's no fee. And I know folks are going to be fascinated with what you have to share with us, because it's not just a far away war. You know about people who served right here from the Atlantic and Southwest Iowa area.
You bet. Yeah, my main interest has been the 168th Infantry, which was composed of the Iowa National Guard. It was a 3rd Iowa Infantry. They were federalized to the 168th, and they were one of the first American units to arrive over in France. And Southwest Iowa played a very prominent role. And I'll be talking about some of the soldiers from the Atlantic area, including Cecil Connolly, one of the first Atlantic men to be killed, and then also Fred Turner. He was killed shortly thereafter. And I'll be talking a little bit about their experiences on the Western Front, and both in the training camps and in the trenches, and then as the war progresses, they're fighting out in the open fields and wheat fields and forests of France.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you have done, Derek, and I just finished this book. It's called Somewhere Over There, and it's the short life, actually, in service of Francis Webster, who was also an Iowan. And, Derek, when I don't know very much about World War One, I'm learning a lot more, but I always just thought about, they talked about how wet and muddy it was and about the trenches. But in this book, you've captured so much more of the total life of the service in those short years that Francis Webster served. And, the day-to-day life and the letters home, this is all from his own writing.
It sure is. I was very blessed with the opportunity to be able to share the experiences of Corporal Francis Webster. And Webster was very unique. In addition to being a soldier in the unit's machine gun company, he also had a journalist background. He was involved with doing political cartoons under Dean Darling while he was in college. And so he saw a real need to be able to communicate what was going on in the lives of National Guard soldiers. And he started using his skills as an illustrator to document that. And so he was creating these visual dispatches and sharing them with some Des Moines area newspapers. Eventually, there was one called Des Moines Capital, which published most of his work. And so he would send them directly to the paper, and at times he'd send them to his parents, and they would forward them on to the paper to kind of get around some of the censorship that was taking place on the home front. And so he had this real knack to be able to document what was taking place. And then, even though it wasn't probably the most humorous at the time, trying to find a spin to it so it'd be engaging and folks would find a little humor in it. And so he documented a lot of his experiences. And then he also had a bag that he carried with him of watercolors and other illustrations. And as I was working with his collection, I really realized that, really came to the conclusion that he most likely wished to publish a book when he got home after the war. And unfortunately, he was killed while putting another soldier before himself, and his buddies had enough foresight to grab his artwork and save it, and it was curated by his family for 90 years. And it just kind of recently surfaced here a few years ago, and it was donated to Iowa Gold Star Military Museum at Camp Dodge. I was able to gain access to it, and first I saw the artwork and I realized, wow, this is a great way to have a human connection and a local tie to Iowa's involvement in World War One. And the more I worked with his papers, the more I worked with his diary and his letters home, the more I realized he was just not only a talented artist, but just a great guy. And I just feel so blessed to be able to share his experiences and his story.
You know, a couple things that as I read the book, and I knew what happened, but I just could hardly wait to get through in all his letters home. And a couple of things, one, for his love for his family, and he always talked about that. Two, he was very optimistic. I think he said he was never afraid. He was always talking about, well, when I get home, I will tell you about this. When I get home, this is what we'll do. When I get home, I want you to come back and see this country. And that optimism, which would have been very difficult given how he had to live and what was going on.
Yeah, very positive individual. And had a lot of leadership potential. He'd been, after he graduated college, he served for a short time as a superintendent of a small school district. And he wrote in his diary, his pre-war diary, that he didn't want to do anything half-heartedly. And documenting his war, he certainly didn't do it half-heartedly. He did just a terrific job of it and had those leadership skills and really led not only guys who enlisted with him, but also new replacements that were coming as the war dragged on and a large amount of casualties were suffered.
So, Derek, how are you going to share some of this information about the big picture of World War One and some of those close to home Southwest Iowa guys? How are you going to be sharing that on Sunday?
Yeah, so what I'll have is a multimodal PowerPoint, and so I'll have a lot of material to share, and a lot of it will be shared through the story of Francis Webster, through his artwork and some of his experiences, but a lot of it ties in directly with what men from the Atlantic area, what they were experiencing, and we can explore that. I think I'll also have images from the battlefields in the Ark River area, where Company M played a very prominent role, and I was able to go there a couple years ago and visit the battlefield, and it still looks like how it did back in 1918. There's cow pastures and fields and ancient stone buildings and shrapnel and bullet casings are just still litter the wheat fields.
Interesting. And that also says to me, and something that Francis Webster talks about, you know, if we imagine that going on here, it was a very rural area in most of the places that those battles went on. It was out in the wheat fields, and the French were still living there. Those French farmers were there.
Yeah, and he really documents the experiences with the French home front, and they at times they stayed with them. You know, soldiers from the Atlantic area would have been staying in the haylofts of French barns before going up to the front lines, and a lot of times they supplement their rations. They go buy eggs or jam or any number of things, kind of supplement the hardtack and the canned corned beef they're eating. And there's a lot of involvement with the French population. And these guys really saw the suffering the French people had gone through since the war started in 1914, and America didn't become involved until 1917.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to think about, that war had been going on for quite some time. And I think I read in here over a million Frenchmen never came home. Over a million men.
They're still finding them over there. And some of the bigger battlefields actually have ossuaries where there's just no way to identify the skeleton. So there's tens of thousands of bones, piled in ossuaries. The scars of war are still experienced over there. I was walking through some woods, and the foxholes that Iowans had occupied are still in the tree lines, and there's still shell holes and piles of bullet casings. And it's you can definitely tell the war was still there and very much in the psyche of the French people still.
So we invite you all to come and hear and visit with Derek Orwig on this Sunday, April 2nd, beginning at 2 p.m. at the American Legion Memorial Building. That's at 201 Poplar Street in Atlantic. There is no fee. Arise is sponsoring this. And we hope to see you there and just some here's some more information from Derek. We really appreciate visiting with you this morning, Derek Orwig.
Yeah, hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I'll see you this weekend.
See you Sunday. Until next time, here's a thought that I think Francis Webster lived by. If you love life, don't waste time, for time is what life is made up of.